Start with the set aside prayer. You'll hear laughter. They're making fun of me. God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your spiritual truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your mercy on me, a sinner. Help me to carry your message today. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we're going through this chapter, and there's so much in it. And it's really our first step. It's a reminder of my first step. It's how they interacted with new people that they were trying to help. It's suggestions for how we should do that. I wrote as the title, how they carried the message to the newcomer. And then I talked about the two rooms. This idea came to me about 2 weeks ago that, I don't know about you, but for me, my alcoholism, I lived in a house with two rooms. And I lived in a room where I was the center of the world, where I had this delusion that I could wrest happiness and satisfaction out of life if I just managed well, if people would just do as I wanted. And that in that world, I was constantly seeking approval and concerned about what people thought of me, and I was like Bill W. driving to be seen as successful so I could be okay. And in that world, I was full of fear and resentment, and I couldn't stop drinking. And I took drugs too. I couldn't stop whatever it took to get rid of my fear and anxiety and be okay. And it crept up on me, and it eventually brought me to my knees. And it was really my self-centeredness that brought me to my knees. It was my spiritual illness, and I could no longer treat it, and I couldn't go on, and I couldn't stop drinking, and I was full of fear, and things were caving in on me. My life at home was just horrible. I'd made a bad relationship decision. Anybody do that? And it was really bad. And all I knew was I couldn't go on, and I asked God for help. Now, I lived in that room, and I think we all live in that room. And then something happened, I think it was God, where I felt surrendered. I couldn't go on anymore. And like an hour before, I hadn't surrendered. And something happened, and God helped me constitutionally capable of seeing the truth of my situation. And for me then, I realized that there's a door, and there's something behind that door. And there's help for me. And I said, God, help me. And then I think as we are surrendered and we're desperate, we see that the world we're living in doesn't work anymore. And that's steps 1, 2, and 3. And I made a decision that I was gonna have a new director. And I believed that there was something behind that door that could help me. And for me, it was, I knew if I went to AA and I did whatever they said, they seemed to have something I didn't have. And I wanted it with the desperation of a drowning man. And God put my life people. And eventually, I opened the door, I turned the knob, and I said, I don't want to live here anymore. Help me, God, get me out of here. And that's steps 1, 2, and 3. And that's the world of Michael's world, our self-centered world. And the world we want to go into in AA is the other room, where God's the center of the world, the real world, and where I work for God, and I do his will, and I don't have to run the world anymore. And I don't have to have fear, because fear is God's job, remember? And I don't have to get angry. I can see people as they are, and I can have peace. Isn't that great? Now, when we open the door to get into that room, I have to get to page 84 and 85, and I have to do the work of steps 3 through 9. And the promises that we talk about every meeting are the promises in the world where God is the center. And those promises are not forever. Then we say, you know, we chant at some of the meetings and this and that. Those are just promises that come to us when I'm connected to God. And so we enter this room, and it's a whole new world. And it describes that on page 84, I've entered the world of the Spirit. And then it tells us how to stay there so that I can stay connected to God, because that's the power that will keep me from drinking. That's the power that will run my life successfully. And I want to stay close to that. And then we learn tools to stay there. Now, we're not perfect because we keep trying to get out of the room. And, you know, we're squeezing our way out. You know, this one bothers me, this fear. But God disciplines us. It says that on page 88. This is how God disciplines us so that I stay connected to Him. And so that, to me, is alcoholism. We lived in a world that doesn't exist. When I'm in that world, I have no power not to drink, no power to manage my life. And I've been given through the gift of the directions in this book and people helping me in AA and the fellowship the ability to live in a different world today. It's a new and wonderful world. And that's what this is described in this book. And so it says on page 92, you're meeting somebody who's in the wrong room, right? Continue to speak of him as alcoholism as an illness, a fatal illness. Now, I could tell people they have a fatal illness. That won't help them. I've told people they're alcoholic. I know that that helped them. I did tell one person I thought he was going to die, and that seemed to change his whole life. There were two of them. Brian comes and then David. And David had signed himself out of treatment. And he's driving away, and his wife says, you better call him. So he calls me. I said, what the heck are you doing? Well, you know, I said, you're going to die. Turn the car around. Just turn it around, I said to Terry. And she turned it around. He went back to treatment, and he's sober, what, 7 or 8 years? I don't take responsibility for it. But sometimes, you know, you have to, you can help people see their truth. And so talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. And I've known people who've died. We've all known, Mark, Stu and I, people who've died, heroin, alcoholic, suicide, fatal accidents from drinking. Keep his attention focused mainly on my personal experience of what? My powerlessness. That's what they need to understand. And people can get that if they come to a meeting, if the meeting's in the right direction, that these are people who were powerless and they seem to have something. They laugh, they seem to have camaraderie, they have fellowship, and they seem to relate, and they have something that I don't have, and I want that. And that's why we should be attractive to new people. We should be attractive to each other in the way we deal with each other. Explain that many are doomed to never realize their predicament. I think that's so true. There's so many people. So I'm not in the hospital anymore, and I really didn't go and consult on alcoholics, but you know, we have a nurse here. She could tell you that there's certainly plenty that come to the hospitals, and they come in real bad shape, and they're end stage, and it's very sad. The good news about alcoholism, if you're just an alcoholic, is it takes a long time to drink yourself to death. But if you can mix drugs in like it is in our society today, it can happen real quickly without even knowing it, the stuff that they're mixing in these drugs, and then you drink with it. So. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholics the whole story unless it will serve some good purpose. And I don't think when they wrote this book, doctors understood alcoholism. I'm not sure they understand it today. Alcoholism may be the most prominent disease in our society. And I don't think we spent more than 3 hours on it in medical school, you know, talking about it in any kind of form. I do remember I went to the asylum. They still had asylums in 1975 where they put people who were alcoholics and they put them in there to dry out. And then I remember there was 20 of them in a room. They had beds in this room, and there was a psychiatrist or whoever it was, another student, and they talked and they shared their stories. And a few told me that they weren't sure they could make it past the first liquor store without drinking. But they were they had nothing, they'd lost everything. And I said, wow, these people are really, it's a bad disease. And I didn't realize I had it, you know. And I would admit people when I was an intern, we would have to go to the ER, south side of Chicago, and admit them and carry them, put them in the room. And I remember on a Saturday night, I admitted this guy who had pancreatitis from drinking. And he was a mess, and he was in terrible pain. He was vomiting up blood. He goes, oh, doctor, I'm never going to drink again. And he grabbed my hand. He says, oh, I'm done for sure. I'm done. I said, please, because, you know, it's a lot of work getting you better. Please, don't drink anymore. 3 weeks later, Thursday night, I'm going out of the ER. There he is again. He says, oh, doctor, I'm done this time. I really, really mean it. And he meant it. And I said, wow, this is really, you see, when you see it like that, you see the disease. Now that I've been in AA, I've seen it the last 16 years, I've seen it so many times. And why can't people give up? I don't know. I don't know why some can and some can't. And you never give up on anybody because you've seen them come back and back and back, and then sometimes something happens. And then they send me a picture of their 7-year coin. They're living in North Carolina. And they were admitted to the hospital 10 times, almost dead. And so it says, you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. So you don't want to beat people down with how bad their situation is. What you want to offer them is a solution. Say, I know things are tough. I know you can't stop drinking, but we have a way out. And that's a great message if people want to hear it. When I had patients, all they wanted to know is, I have a way out of my stage 4 pancreas cancer, but they didn't. But if I said, I want you to read this book and do everything in the first 88 pages, you think they would do it? Of course. And they wouldn't wait like a week or tell me their plan. They wouldn't say, no, that's a little drastic, doctor. No, they'd grab it, right? And so, the key to us is seeing the desperation of a drowning man. It says, even though your protege, that's what they called him, may not have entirely admitted his condition, he's become very curious to know how you got well, and that's from page 20. They say, you're wondering how we had recovered from this hopeless condition of mind and body, and you ask, what do I need to do? Now, I'm still waiting for somebody to come up to me and say, what do I do? They don't usually do that. They'll say, do you want to help me? Or can I have your number? It's not, what do I need to do? And then Sandy Beach says, what do I need to do next? And that's why if you give them a simple instruction, tell them to call you tomorrow. Or you get their number, you call them, and then you say, call me tomorrow. That's a simple direction. If they follow that, they're following a direction that's not them. And then maybe you say you read these pages or whatever. It should start out simple. And then over time, they get used to doing work that isn't their plan and is the plan in the book. So I stick to the book. I give them assignments reading the book. Let him ask you that question if he will. And then here's squiggly writing. Tell him exactly what happened to you. And I think that's what people need to know when you tell your story. It's not how bad your drinking was, but tell them what happened that last day, how bad it was, and then how did you get to be where you're up in front of me talking? What did you do? And it has to be God, how God worked in my life through people and through this book and through the steps. Stress the spiritual feature. Is there any other feature, really? It's a spiritual, it says you have a condition that only a spiritual experience can do what? Conquer. We have to conquer this because it's too much for us. And the spiritual experience conquers the disease, not me. I never conquer it. And I never conquer it for anybody else. He doesn't have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes of God. And this is key. Provided it makes sense to him. And I've heard very good speakers talk about this. It has to be something that you can go to at 3 a.m. when everything's bleak and your mind's a mess, and you can go to this God and you can get help from them. It can't be a doorknob or a tree. It can't be the group. It has to be something greater than human power that you can go to. And for me, it started out as God, and now it's become, you know, my Lord. And so, and the main thing is that he'd be willing to believe in a power greater than himself. That's not that hard, is it? But you believe it or not, it's very hard for alcoholics to completely give up on running their life. And then you can believe in the power, but here's the key, and that he live by spiritual principles where God's the center, right? You're in that other room, God's the director, you work for him, you play the role he assigns, he'll take care of worry, he'll give you everything you need, he'll take away your resentments when you ask him, your fears, your character defects. It works in that room. In the other room, nothing works. You just get more character defects, more resentment, more fear. And then, since you're living sober without God, you have no power over alcohol. And how long can you, if you're an alcoholic, go back to that room where you're running the show and not drink? How long? You know, for people, it's different times. But I know I can't go back in that room and not drink. I will. And I don't want to forget how bad it was when I asked God to help me. Because you have to keep your first step alive to stay in the room where God's the director. Because if you keep your first step alive, you're going to ask God and pray in the morning, and you're going to have contact with other people in the program, and you're going to be working the steps, and your life gets better. We still get angry and fearful, and we make foolish decisions. Anybody ever do that sober? But we're still, it's different. When dealing with such a person, you better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There's no use arousing any prejudice, which is old ideas, he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. And, you know, I tried not to prejudice anybody, but now I, you know, when I pray, I say in Jesus' name, and that's okay. People don't like it, that's fine. They don't have to agree with me, but it's my conception of God. And I've heard people, when we used to have big crowds over at the other place before COVID, things have changed. And some people would come up to me and say, you know, I don't like your this meeting. You talk about God too much. That happened quite a bit. And I say, well, I'm really sorry to hear that. But if things don't work out for you, come back. We're here for you. And it says your prospect may belong to a religious denomination. He may have more religion. A lot of people have a lot of religious education and training. But why didn't that work for these people? Because they never let God run the world. They're in that room where they're the center of it. I always believed in God, but I never let him work. Did anybody look back, now that you're sober, about the things you did before you came in, the bad decisions? And you know why? Because I had the wrong manager. And I have to remind myself, I wasn't a bad person per se. I had the wrong manager, me. And what I have to do now is fire myself all the time. Quicker than I should sometimes. You know what I mean? I have to just fire myself. You know how I said you have to keep your mouth shut at home? It really helps your marriage. And right, Mark? And so I have to fire myself before I talk. And I say, no, I don't really need to say this or suggest that she do this. She's capable of it. I know I'm rambling. People probably turned it off, but that's okay. It says, he may be the example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish, obstructive, constructive action. See, just believing alone is insufficient. It won't change me. I have to have the faith accompanied by work, by self-sacrifice, and unselfish, constructive action. If not, I slip back into that world. The problem with alcoholism is that we slip back into that self-centered world without even knowing it sometimes. And it could start like, I don't want to go to the Wednesday night meeting anymore, he talks too much. And then, oh, I don't need the Saturday meeting, and I don't need to call every day, and I don't need to read, and I forgot to pray this morning, that's okay. Before you know it, you're in a different world. And we're so good at getting out of the world of the spirit that we have to work constantly. It says we have a daily reprieve based upon our spiritual condition to stay connected to God. And admitting that he probably knows more about religion than you do, called to his attention the fact that however deep his faith and knowledge, he could not have applied it or he would not drink. And AA is the application of the spiritual principles that God wants us to live by so we can stay connected to him, denying ourselves, serving him, serving others. Because remember, we're going to read later on, the guy says, well, I go to church. And they say, well, no, that's not enough. You need something more than that. Fred tells the guys, well, I go to church. They say, no, we need something more than that. Church is great. But church to me now is where I keep my faith alive. And that never happened before. We represent no particular faith or denomination. These are just general principles. Now, on page 94 is a key. If you're going to help somebody, you have to be able to outline the program of action. Can you do that? And I think that's one of the problems in sponsorship, is that a lot of people haven't gone through this book. Or I shouldn't say it. I don't know if it's a problem. But there are people who haven't done this through the book who can't outline the program of action. And then I don't know how successful they are with other people. I don't know. Because I don't know. And I'm not judging. But they're telling you here, outline the program of action, which is outlined from page 60 to page 88. And explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you were able to look at your thinking, how you were able to look at your resentments and your fears and your shame and guilt, and how you were to be able to face and be rid of them, and how you're able to see my self-centered character. All I have to do is go to the food store to be reminded of my impatience, and it's not bad, but I notice things, you know, because I am Michael the Magnificent. We have these character defects. They never go away, but we don't have to practice them anymore. So I can still have intolerance, judgment, impatience, envy, all these, but I don't have to practice them. I have the chance now to say, God, I don't want to practice that. Now, I did hear something that really made a lot of sense. If you keep practicing your character defects, God is not going to remove them. Seems pretty straightforward, doesn't it? Explain how you straighten out your past, how you made amends, why you're endeavoring to be helpful to him. That's the whole deal. Program of action, how you did your self-appraisal, how you straighten out your past, why you're endeavoring to be helpful to him. I emphasize that working with him is a vital part of my recovery. Make it plain he's under no obligation to you. You know, they're not paying us for therapy. But my only hope is he will help other alcoholics. And I tell people, the only thing I ask for you to do is to take this message to somebody else. So when he escapes his own difficulties through this work, maybe he helps suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of its own. That's so different way of living than I lived before. We want the welfare of others, and I have to remind myself of that all the time. It's not something that comes easily for me, that I have to think of others before myself. But I always feel better when I do that. If your talk has been sane, that means sensible, practical, quiet, and full of human understanding. If you've had compassion for him, if you've shown empathy to him, if you're not talking down to him, you're sharing, you have the same illness, you have perhaps made a friend. And that's what you want to do. There are a lot of support groups for people with the same illnesses, right? And they talk, and there's cancer support groups, etc. So we want to be a support, but we have to do individual work. You have to work individually with someone to do this program. And maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. So somebody may not, you may meet with him a couple times, they tell you, you know, to F, you know, and or they just say they don't have time for this, they don't want what I have, blah, blah, blah. It's fine. You just say, you have my number, I'm here for you, I love you. And you never know that they'll come back. 3 years later, they just come back on Saturday morning, right, Stu? Mark, and they know there's a group here and people will love them and they come back and we just say we're glad you're here. And this is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. So you want to make him feel hopeless by explaining my hopelessness and the disease to them so they may see it for themselves. Unless people can take that first step, and the first step is the hopelessness of their condition. They said in the foreword, we're 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition, mind and body. And that's why they say if you want what you have and are willing to go to any length to have it, then you're ready to take these steps. The steps are there, how they went from hopeless to having recovered. And so that's all AA has, is the steps. AA doesn't have any other program. They have one program. And you can be in the program by doing the steps. You can be in the fellowship and never work the steps today. But if you're working the program and in the fellowship, that's the desire. And then people can see you change in the meetings as you're working the program, and then they want to do it too. Your canon may give reasons why you need not follow all of the program. I've had that happen a few times. Mark, has that ever happened to you? They always give you reasons why they can't do it. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning which requires discussion with other people. Do not contradict such views. Tell him how you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken the action of just trying to do what somebody else is. What I've had is people come in and they're very distraught. Their life is just a complete mess, and sometimes they cry afterwards. And then I say, well, we have a meeting Wednesday night. And then they'll go, well, that's my bowling night or something. You see, and it's, they just can't give in. And I'm being silly, but it happens, and it's sad. And what's sad is that I was used to taking care of people as my profession. So when I see people in need, I can't help but wanting to help them. But I have to stop and set boundaries that I have no power to change them. I can only show them the way of what I did. On your first visit, tell them about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is all their first visit. And if he shows interest, lend them your copy of the book. And that's what the book is. The book is for someone. In fact, the first 43 pages in Doctor's Opinion is for people to see their hopeless condition. Bill's story, more about alcoholism, we agnostic, Doctor's Opinion, how we have no power. I think I'll stop there. Should I do more or should I stop? Nobody seems to care. You want me to do one more paragraph?
Sure.
All right. Couldn't help myself. All right. Mark will call me later. Unless your friend wants to talk further about himself, do not wear out your welcome. Give him a chance to think it over. Now remember, this is just one visit. This is what they did. But if you do stay, let him steer the conversation any direction he likes. Sometimes a new man is anxious to proceed at once, and you may be tempted to let him do so. This is sometimes a mistake. If he has trouble later, he's likely to say you rushed him. And I think I've tried to rush people to get into the steps, and they haven't really taken their first step. I thought they had, but they hadn't. And so that's hard to know if you go through like Doctor's Opinion, Bill's story with them, they're taking their first step as they're reading that and going through it with you. You You'll be most successful with alcoholics if you do not exhibit any passion for crusade or reform. Now, Bill was trying to be the spiritual reformation, and I do have passion for it, but I hope I'm doing it in the right way. Never talk down to an alcoholic from any moral or spiritual hilltop. It's really important. We're not any better than them. We just may have had the experience of change and the experience of going through the change. And simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for its inspection. They talk about that. We have a kit of spiritual tools. And the spiritual tools do not work in my world. They only work in God's world. So the tools have to be plugged into God, not into me. So when I take these spiritual kits and tools, they have to be plugged into the God socket, not Michael's socket. But they always work if I plug them in. Show them how they work for you. That's what the book does. They say, how do you want to be free of anger? And they tell you, this was our course. And they tell you in three paragraphs how to be free of anger. Then they say, what about fear? And in four paragraphs, they tell you how to be free of fear. It's simple. The prayers, the tools. Offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him that if he wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And that's where I'm going to stop there on page 95. See how important they saw working with others? You see how intense they saw it? And then that might help you if you see somebody and you go up to them. I do say, if you see a new person, the best thing is ask them if you can get their number. And then you call them and just talk for a few minutes and see if they're interested, and then set up a time to talk again or meet. They're not going to call you, usually. If you give them numbers, a list of numbers, I don't think they call it because they're scared. They're full of fear. They feel bad about their situation. It says, when what seemed at first a flimsy read, and the flimsy read is you calling them, you offering to meet them, eventually becomes this powerful hand of God. It has to start somewhere. So you want to be a reed when someone's drowning and offer them the little reed. And then as you work together and they do the work, the reed becomes the powerful hand of God. And that's page 28. So I'll stop with that.
All right.